and Elmandon joins in. Heartbreak City and Elmandon race up to Hartnell. They look the three from El Moonquith. It's Heartbreak City. Elmandon on the outside. They've paired down to fight it out. Heartbreak City the inside and Elmandon on the outside. Elmandon and Heartbreak City. What a finish to the Melbourne Cup. Elmandon putting his nose in front of Heartbreak City. They hit the line. Elmandon won it by a very narrow margin.
Hello and welcome back to the Trainer's Heart. I'm Todd Blum, your host here in the Sports Thought Studios. We're back for episode 12. Just had the week off last week, just a little bit of a freshen up. It wasn't a spell, no time in the paddock or anything like that. Just a bit of a let up and just to keep get a bit of a freshen up here in the Trainer's Hut. But we're back and back in a big, big way because we are going on the Melbourne Cup Path Part 2. And we're going to have a chat with Rob Hickmont, who has two horses that are going to feature very prominently in the spring this year. We know they're up at Macedon Lodge, a property that Rob knows so well, having spent so long working there for Lloyd and Nick Williams and the family. And he's trained with a lot of success out of the property. He knows it probably better than anyone. And two Melbourne Cup winners coming from under his care during that time, Green Moon in 2012, and Elmandon won the cup as well, and it was a good result, Elmandon, let me tell you. But Chabot, who's one of the horses we're going to have a chat about today, and of course Django Freeman being the other, the audience are quite familiar with these horses. We had Suman Hedge have a chat about both of them. He was the bloodstock agent that's responsible for sourcing these two gallopers and brought them to Australia under the care of Rob Hickmont and their owners. So if you haven't listened to that chat with Suman Hedge, I suggest you go back and do so. It was episode 4, and while you're there, have a look at a few of the other episodes because only big names here in the Trainer's Hut. But we're going to have a chat about Chabot and Django Freeman. They're up at Mount Macedon, and Rob Hickmont said to his old boss, Lloyd Williams, "I've got these two stayers. Caulfield's not really suited to training them. Do you mind if I just go and do a bit of pre-training up there at Macedon Lodge with it being empty?" And Lloyd, being the gentleman that he is, said, "Absolutely, go for it." And I think Rob might have just forgot about the creature comforts up there because he rang the boss back a couple of weeks later and said, "Do you mind if I keep them here for the spring?" And of course, Lloyd was, as we know, he's one of the good guys in racing and was all too happy to help out. So that's where they are and will remain for the spring. And I think that just gives them another added advantage in, particularly Chabot for the Melbourne Cup, is looking a very, very interesting runner in the lead up. And definitely one that I think will give it a fair shake a little later in the spring. But let's head to the man who has these two horses in his care and is going to map out that spring campaign. And joining me on the line now is the two-time Melbourne Cup winning trainer, Rob Hickmont. Rob, thanks very much for being a part of the show and joining me in the Trainer's Hut.
Great to be here, Todd, and thanks for the invite, mate.
Now, we're on the path to the Melbourne Cup here in the Trainer's Hut. This is part two, and we wanted to get you on and have a bit of a chat about a couple of horses that you train that will feature prominently in the Melbourne Cup, all going well a little later in the spring, in Chabot and Django Freeman. You've got them up at a property you know quite well, Macedon Lodge. It initially started as a plan for pre-training, but you've decided to utilise the property a little longer, Rob.
Yeah, Todd, Lloyd was very gracious in letting us utilise the property. I initially just asked him if we could have a three-week sabbatical up there to get them out of Caulfield after that they'd had their one run in the autumn. And from there on, the improvements he's done in the property really blew me mind, and I just asked if we could extend that stay, and he was very accommodating in letting us stay there, so it's a great coup for the horses and the owners, and we couldn't be happier with the progress of both horses.
You said there's a few improvements that have happened there at the property. What are some of your favourite features up there at Mount Macedon?
Yeah, look, Lloyd and Nick have really, it was a pretty blank canvas when they took over in 2006, and obviously one of Lloyd's biggest philosophies in life is the sponging off successful people. You know, he was a man-made millionaire, and I think he associated himself with some successful people and learned off them, and he's taken that through his whole life. And what he's taken from bits and pieces of all over the world, meaning that there's one little part of the which was just a paddock, and he turned it into a pristine paddock, which is after they do their work, it's a post-cooling down area where you can be hands-on seeing how your horses recover. You know, build a sand roll down there, water troughs, a beautiful picking area. And, you know, even since the 2 years I've left, he's refurbished both tracks, world-class now, you know, they're just fantastic. Not they weren't, there was nothing wrong with them before that, but he's upgraded once again, and the tracks are fantastic. He's bird-proofed every box in the place, so, you know, minimised the risk of, you know, especially those European horses that do come over, they can be pretty susceptible to some infections that they're exposed to some new, you know, bird poo or whatever gets in the feed. So, you know, just the little 1% that he's done out there is fantastic. And it, you know, the water walkers, the treadmills, and probably his latest addition was the Shaolin Solarium shed, which houses five horses. You want to go in and have a hose down, and then a massive big head, you know, with hot water comes over the horse's sacro area and back, and then you take them out of the other side and they pop under the solarium to dry off, and they're therapeutic as well with the infrared light. So it's just an amazing property, and you know, both these horses are perfectly in heaven.
I was going to say, to come in handy, the solarium. The horse goes through the solarium and then he spends a bit of time in the water walker. It's like the Greek Adonis on the beach.
It is. You know, that's exactly what they do. They come out of the water walking. You know, it was 1 degree up there and a good frost. But, you know, once they get out, he's got the water heated as well. It's about 19 degrees and there's plenty of steam coming off it today. But, you know, they get over into those showers, so they're in there, and you know, you're able to dry your horse off, and as I said, it's therapeutic at the same time. You've noticed a hell of a difference in their muscle texture. The chiropractor noticed that exact same thing, very limited issues with the horses since that they arrived up there, which, as you know, as well as the straight line training, is another great plus for a horse as well.
Oh, Chabot and Django Freeman, they're up there, and by the sounds of what you've already said, they should be loving it. How are they going with a bit of a tree change up there?
Yeah, good. I think Chabot was a pretty bit of a handful as a stallion. He still is a stallion, obviously, but you know, there's a lot more things happening at Caulfield, and we went up and saw him in Germany when we pre-purchased him, and his property was Marcus Klub trains out of. It's a very old property, you know, it's in the middle of Cologne, and he had to walk about 15 minutes to the track through these beautiful forests, and then he went on, you know, his own private track, you know, it was about 15 minutes away, and I think he thought he was back home. You could really see him soaking up that sort of life again. He was pretty familiar to it, and Django was a little bit different. It came off more of a Caulfield-based sort of setup, trained at the track at Cologne, so he was up and about for a couple of days, but he's a very relaxed animal, and he's done nothing but do that over the last couple of weeks, or 3 or 4 weeks, so yeah, I'm very happy with their progress, mate.
We'll start with Chabot. When are we expecting to see him back at the races? We know he only had the one run over winter. What's his early target race looking like to kick him off?
Yeah, look, he'll go to Mooney Valley on the 22nd of August in a 2040 handicap. Billy Pike will be over to ride. Obviously, he'll be riding Bob Peters and Grant and Lada Williams horses throughout the spring. So, well, Billy will be spending, you know, all the spring over here, which is fantastic for us. Obviously, he's owned by some Western Australian clients who have a great rapport with him, and, you know, his record speaks for itself. So, he'll go there first, and then on the 12th of September, we'll go to a 2500 at Flemington, an open handicap before running into Bart Cummings, and that's a race we've always targeted with him since he's arrived in Australia, even before his tendon. You know, that was a race we'd love to really follow, that path that old Mandan took in 2016.
You mentioned Al Mandan there. How does he rate against Al Mandan? Is he a similar sort of horse, or is he a little different?
Yeah, look, Al Mandan was obviously a colt when Lloyd bought him, but he was a lad too, and he was after he did his tendon, you know, he had him for about 8 weeks, 6 or 8 weeks, and he did a tendon. And he was subsequently gelded after that. So he was a lot more refined than this horse. You know, I think, you know, Bob Mandon raced about 4.55 in the Melbourne Cup, where this horse is, you know, he's sitting around the 5.18 mark now. Probably peak race weight would be 4.90, I'd suggest. And, yeah, a bit different, but both very good winded horses, true stayers, Al Mandon. You know, until he got to that 2,500, he really came to the fore and beyond. Yeah, no, I think this horse will be the same. But, you know, he has won a couple of, you know, rated races, you know, over 2,000 when he first did arrive. But we'll see the best of him definitely when he gets past tomorrow night.
Yeah, and that Bart Cummings this year, it's certainly shaping as a mouth-watering contest, which, full credit to the VRC, because they made it a winning your in to the Melbourne Cup, so it's an excellent initiative, and it's good to see the quality of horse that it's attracting, and this year will be no different.
Yeah, exactly. It's a race a lot of people are earmarking, and, you know, if you're good enough to win it, I think, especially this year, you're going to be riding the Melbourne Cup. You know, obviously market, but, you know, depending on what happens with the other European horses, if they do come over, it's, you know, I think it's going to be a very good race. And it's a well-timed race, being a month out from the Cup. You can have plenty of time to assess your horse, and, you know, Lord's Masterstroke was there, you know, not to race that horse again. He raced early in the winter, and you know, he had that month break just to freshen him up and get the speed back in while still maintaining, you know, obviously a terrific fitness base, which, you know, we could do that up at Massive and Lodge. The way the facility is designed, it's got plenty of variety every day. They do something different without putting too much pressure on their legs. They can get a lot of slow kilometres into them and maintain their fitness levels. And, you know, we didn't have to work them hard gallop wise. That was the key to the property, and winning it.
Yeah, and I suppose that's, like you say, with the European horses, it gives you that luxury if you win the race that you can give them a bit of a different preparation where you don't have to keep continuing to race to get the rating up or to further qualify. It gives you that where you can sort of take stock and I suppose build them up to the day and train them to the minute, as yourself and Lloyd did so well in the past.
Yeah, exactly, and you know, you'd run the risk of further getting a weight penalty if you do go again somewhere, unless you race in weight for age races, which there's not those weight for age races barring the Cox Plate, so they, you know, you need a special horse to be running in that race, and this horse wouldn't fit that bill. You wouldn't even contemplate that, but yeah, I think once that work's done, and yeah, the job's made so much easier with having facility at Mount Masson to be utilised for us. It's going to be a real feather in the cap, and yeah, look, we won't jump the gun or anything like that. It's a long, long way off, but you know, there's plenty of disappointments in racing, and hopefully we don't have to cross that path again, especially after this horse did attend and after he won Roy Higgins. But yeah, I'm sure with just the facility up there, we can keep him sound, and yeah, he hasn't had an issue since his time off, and I don't expect him to going forward.
That's good to hear, and it's good that he's up there at the property, and hopefully that doesn't happen again, not just for the owner's sake, but he certainly was an exciting horse, and I think we all felt it a little bit last year. But before we move on to Django Freeman, Rob, I didn't ask Suman about this when I had him on the program earlier in the series on episode 4, but there's an interesting story to how he came to purchase the horse, and it involved one morning in the Caulfield Trainer's Hut, I think it was. Can you fill us in a bit about the deal, how the deal was done?
Yeah, look, I remember Suman showing me the video of the horse. I don't know if it was at the Hut or at the races one day.
Oh, I might have been at the races. I might have, yeah.
Yeah, look, I don't know. It was at Caulfield. One day at Caulfield races. I hadn't really known Suman that long, and he showed me the video of the horse's last win on German Derby Day. It was in a $52,000, probably equivalent of a Benchmark 7 here, and you know, you couldn't not be impressed by the actual visual and how easily the horse did it. He won by 7.5, and considered an absolute jog can, and his times on the day, you know, compared to the Derby was stacked up. He would have been right to finish in the Derby. He would have been top three, whether he won or not, I don't know. But, you know, he would have been a million-pound horse then. And, yeah, look, he was still a dear horse for where he was rated. But, yeah, look, there was plenty of interest in the horse, and we had to go above and beyond, you know, what the offers were. And it had to take place pretty quickly. And, you know, it was lucky that I think the horse was sold in about, you know, Sumer sold, you know, 25% and two phone calls, and I sold 60% to Jeff Evans and Matty Blake, Glenn Whitten and Eddie Rigg over in Western Australia in one phone call. So it was pretty well done in, you know, 5 minutes a horse. And we were lucky to get Dave Price, my biggest client, into the horse, and Mike Simons jumped in as well. And yeah, before we knew it was all done, so. Could have sold him five times over, you know, off the video. It was that impressive. So yeah, it was a whirlwind trip. And then the chiropractor, Lincoln Kerr, and I went over and had a look, inspected the horse. And, you know, we couldn't have been more happy with what we saw on our first initial visual of the horse, and, you know, how he presented. And yeah, then he travelled over to James Eustace and did a bit of work in quarantine over at Newmarket and came to us via. Tullamarine didn't get into the, he wasn't rated high enough to get into the Werribee system, so we had to go through Tullamarine, hence his innovation was bringing that year, which probably, you know, could be a blessing in disguise, although he still did a tendon, you know, come March or April, whatever it was when he did his tendon, so very happy to secure him, and yeah, hopefully he can take us on the way.
We spoke with Suman. Of course, being the agent, about how the deals get done with horses such as this, the other side of the world, a lot of three-way conversations. You train a couple of imported horses, and obviously the two we're talking about today, and there's a few more in your stable. How much of an input do you like to have in terms of inspecting them? Like, do you go overseas and have a look at them, or is it more just you've got to trust these agents and the buyers and that sort of thing, Rob?
Look, you do get a lot of horses thrown at you. Yeah, we could get, you know, especially this time of year, you know, you might get 5 to 10 horses put up for offer, and, you know, you've got to really scrutinise the videos, the form, the action, track conditions. You don't get much footage of seeing the horse, you know, post-run. You know, you might have a good look at them, you know, via video, or, you know, even a couple of photos of the horse. But yeah, look, I can tell you, I mean, there's nothing that has really grabbed me as much as Chappelle did within that one video. All I had to see was that one video. I said, just get him, you know, that's the horse we need. And yeah, since then there's nothing really jumped out of the ground that has been as impressive. But yeah, look, you've got to be so selective when you're paying the ridiculous money that we do have to acquire these horses. But it has been a man-made market that we've created, and we've got to live with that. But the money is huge, so you've got to do your due diligence with the horses. Obviously, the betting comes into place as well. That comes at a cost, but you have to do that. And once all the boxes are ticked, then it's another ball game of getting them over here and acclimatising. You know, that could be a heartbreaking thing as well. So it's there is a lot of risk involved in it, but the rewards with staying horses in Australia is, you know, entirely recommended. We don't breed them here to start with, so, you know, that's the only place we can get them from. You know, we might get the odd one come through, surprise baby, for instance. You know, he's been a terrific horse. I mean, he's going to take some beating in this year's Melbourne Cup, that's for sure. And, but as a rule, you know, we've seen the field over the last 10 years. It's really internationalised, and 90% of the field made up from those stone stock in Europe and France and Germany, so, and Ireland.
Well, that's one thing we're big on here in the Trainer's Hut, is the breeding industry trying to go back to developing a few staying stallions and really supporting them, and that's going to be a big part of what we're about on the show. And horses such as Chabot could be a big part of that in the future. It's not going to happen overnight, Rob, but hopefully the the industry can support a few of these, you know, more stain type stands, and we can get back to going to the yearling sales and trying to buy a Melbourne Cup horse or a Derby horse or something like that.
Exactly. I think everyone, you know, wants that return for the buck. They want a, you know, golden slipper winner that could turn them into 50 million, or, you know, the odds of those things happening, or Guinness winner, you know, the odds of those things happening, you know, very, numbers are outweighed. And, you know, I think it's really got to start with the program of the races, with these continuity of staying races. You know, we need that. And, you know, if we did have the right stallion or stallions that could give us the old Zabil days, you know, he was a great old stallion for the New Zealand in Australia, and he blew the flag, you know, many times at the Melbourne Cup. But if we get a headliner back there and we can start, you know, producing them ourselves, it's going to stand us in good stead. But there's got to be better programming and staying races throughout the whole year and give every horse an opportunity. And I'm sure that could be designed if we do get the right horses. And saw plenty of good stallions at Lloyd's. And obviously the marketplace wasn't there for them post their racing careers in Australia, and they had to send them back home, as the Green Moons in the United States. Horses, I think, really would have clicked here, but had a good turn of foot and great temperaments and cracking types. And unfortunately, you know, they had to do the best by their part owners and themselves to get the best deal for themselves, so they were sold back to interest overseas.
Yeah, Green Moon was an interesting one because he was really well performed over 2,000 metres as well. So, of course, he had that Melbourne Cup win, but he was such an attractive horse. I was really surprised that there wasn't a home found for him. But anyway, we've gone off topic a bit, Rob, and we'll have a chat about Django Freeman now. So we saw him step out a couple of times in what was his first Australian prep. We know that he had a few issues. How's he coming along now, and will he be back at the races in a similar time or a little bit later?
Yeah, look, he'll probably go early September sometime. I haven't discussed it with the owners as such. But, you know, that early September, you know, that probably 3 to 4 weeks before the Turnbull, we'd like to run him in the Turnbull just to get a good guide on him. We bought him as a two-year-old after the Winter Paven, or before the Winter Paven, and he went second in that. It's probably like the Champagne Stakes for us in Germany. It's their biggest two-year-old, over a mile, and he showed plenty, and then he progressed, obviously, won the Bavarian Classic, and then second in both lead-ups, Newton Renan, behind the subsequent winner, Lucario. And we were a bit disappointed, but still happy on the day, for a couple of reasons. If he had won the German Derby, he would have come over here very highly rated, and with some good prize money still to be picked up with a horse like him coming out from, you know, with a 99 rating. He still gets some of the handicaps okay and the quality handicaps that should suit him. So you can pick up your 150, 250 on the way through, and whilst progressing the horse. He's progressing well. Time will tell with him where he sits in the... one thing I can say about the horse, he's probably grown half a hand and really matured into a heavier or stronger stallion. He's one we've got to keep an eye on his weight. He's about 5'1" at the moment. And when we arrived at James Houston Stable in Newmarket, he was 4.55, so it's a big contrasting difference, and especially off a knee chip when he hyperextended his knee, it's not ideal, but we'll work on stripping him, and I think he's enjoying life up there a little too much at the moment, but it's only a bit of tweaking with his work that I'm sure we can get him back.
You talk about putting a bit of weight on there, Rob. Normally with the guys, the boys, solariums go hand in hand with the weight room, so maybe a little less time in a solarium might help him.
Exactly, and a little bit. I've never seen a horse, he's like a bloody hoover. He gets out in the paddock and he doesn't lift his head for about 4 or 5 hours. So he's an absolute glutton of a horse and just loves food in general. It's a good trait to have because you can work to feed them, and you go adjust their work to the feed, and we can he's got plenty of improvement to come, but there's no panic yet at this stage.
Has he given you a bit of a feel as to whether he'd appreciate it a bit further, or is a bit sharper over the 2000, or like you say, you're just waiting for the Turnbull to make a definitive decision on which direction you take?
Yeah, look, he's a different horse to Chabal. He's, I think Chabal's probably the cleanest horse I've ever seen in the lungs. Half freakish, he's... when he came over, there was one gallop we ever touched him in the lung, and not that he, I don't think I've worked him past 1400 the horse, but that was some solid, good improvement, 1400 metre gallops, and he's a freak. But this horse, he's a bit heavier in the wind. He's a big strider, relaxes good. I don't know about the 2 mile, but the mile and a half, I think, is gettable with him.
Yeah.
You'd love to be able to stretch him to 2 mile, but we're hoping that it'll be. He did show, he was pretty sharp within his track work at his initial preparation pre his knee chip. And we hope we don't sort of lose that. Even his first up run, he was, a very, very wet track and he was underdone. But he didn't really handle the wet track either. He's a better on top of the ground horse with his beautiful long action. But I thought there was plenty of merit in his first one. And second up run was disappointing on face value, but on post-scope on the Monday, we found that he had a little bit of ulceration on his palate, near his palate, and which led us to believe that he'd flipped it, so he'll be racing with a tongue tie on and hopefully keep that in place and get some that full optimum intake that he needs. And he pulled up like a horse and had his first gallop after the Valley, and he was much fitter than that, so he obviously didn't get the oxygen intake that he needed.
There's a couple of things, Rob, that I want to ask you before I let you go. You've been very generous with your time this afternoon. The first one's an easy one. I'm just going to buddy you up a bit before I get into the hard stuff. Now, there's a horse I want to ask you about, Sea Moon. He was one of my favourites. He came to Australia with big raps. Did we ever see the best of him? Because, he looked like he was a shoe-in for that Melbourne Cup, and I've still got the ticket at home in my drawer back at Mum and Dad's, so I haven't cashed it in yet, so...
he was a fragile colt. Beat Hollow, he wasn't the most successful stallion of all time. He was a good stallion, but not the most successful, and he was no tough Galileo or anything like that, and he was just, he showed glimpses. We never saw the best of him, I think he was favoured for the Hong Kong Bars, when Lloyd purchased the horse, and I think he might have spiked the temp on him, a couple of days before, so he obviously didn't run, but the raps on him, I think it was the Hardwick, he might have won over there.
He won the Hardwick.
And, he looked the goods, beautiful type of horse. But he was a bit of a thinker as well. And, I don't think his entirety helped him at all. But he was probably too valuable to geld. So he was a... definitely didn't see the best of him, that's for sure. That's bringing horses into a different hemisphere. And not that he didn't acclimatise, he looked a million bucks a horse, but... as you say, mate, we never saw the best of him, and that was a shame.
Who was your favourite horse from your time at Lloyd's, Rob? You have a favourite?
Efficient was, obviously one of the favourites. He was such a, unbelievable galloper, and we're probably robbed of, seeing the best of him through injury after his Melbourne Cup win. He won the Turnbull after that and went second in the Sydney Cup at his last start, but he was a freak of a horse, and he's probably the only one horse that Lloyd ever talked about taking to Ascot for the Ascot Gold Cup, and it was efficient, He was a horse that he could have measured up in against the best over there. He was very lucky to be in one of the first two horses that, when I first arrived at Lloyd's, I had him in the care with Gallic and Perlin, and great on horses that come off tendon injuries and had 12 months off. And, there were 600 kilo horses when we first got them, and body. They look like woolly mammoths. Gallic was one of the toughest horses I've ever seen. He raced through so many adversities and come out the other side. Winning the Sydney Cup and Adelaide Cup was and Woolly Valley Cup, they were just great thrills, and more proud of the horse than anything. He was just such a tough competitor. And Perlin was a, I think the Doomben Cup win was one of his best. Obviously, he went, he had a foot issue going into it, and, you know, he overcame that on the day, and it was a great win, and yeah, it was, yeah, those two hold special places in my heart for sure. And Faulkner being a homebred, he really rated him so highly. You know, everyone, you know, loved the horse. And the young Ukraine boy looked after him. Henry Kolbachuk is, you know, did a fantastic job with the horse as well. He knew him inside out, backwards. And if there was a Mozzie bite on the horse in the morning, he'd know about it. And, yeah, it was a great ride with him. And there's no masterstroke by Lloyd after. I'm second in the index. He said, "I'll win the Caulfield Cup with him next year." Well, I thought he was mad, but there you go. He turned him around and got to the mile and a half, and had a slushy race in the Melbourne Cup after Nicky lost on the bunny in that day. I think he was 30 or 40 lengths up at one stage with a slashing six. So he was a fantastic animal.
Efficient was one of my favourites as well, Rob, and I was in year 8 when he won the Melbourne Cup, and there were a couple of teachers that had a very good collect in the teachers' lounge there after they asked who would win the cup, and I put a few of them onto Efficient.
Well, those couple of A's that you did get at school, they weren't through your
brain
anyway.
we'll get into the serious stuff now, Rob. Now, Lloyd and Nick Williams, we know they've got a large team of horses overseas with Joseph O'Brien, and at the moment it's looking unlikely or highly unlikely that Joseph will be able to bring the horses down himself, but the one-way tickets are looking to be available. Is there any chance that you've just set up camp there at Macedon Lodge, you know the team well, Twilight Payment and Master Reality come down for the Melbourne Cup and just get transferred to R. Hickmott?
Look, that has never been spoken about with Lloyd, Nick and I, that's for sure, but look, I think they could still race. I don't know how they'd go about it if they, you know, obviously Aidan and Joseph and all the European trainers send their, you know, head lads over or foremans, and there must be something in place that they could look after the horse in their care. So I think if they came over in quarantine, there's no reason to take them out of anyone's name. But the one-way ticket horses, I think, could be a good influx of those sort of horses coming. Everyone's of the same opinion that now the Europeans are coming, and it's going to be a good opportunity for a lot of people to purchase horses. And there's a lot of horses already pre-purchased over there. OGI, Lloyd and Nick, as you say, and Australian Thoroughbreds. And, you know, I think there'll be still a few come over. So it'll be interesting over the next month what transpires and who's put up the hands. I see Charles Bellows has said that his old horse is coming out again. So, you know, I think there'll be a few follow suit.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully the trainers can bring them down and send a staff member and that down to look after them in quarantine. But like you say, it has been said. I know Charlie Fallow said if his staff couldn't come and look after him, he'd be keen to transfer him to someone for the spring and get the chance to win that Melbourne Cup with a horse that he obviously loves so much.
Yeah, look, he's great mates with Dave Eustace, so I think that would probably suit Charlie. But yeah, I think between the government and Harvey L, you know, they are just getting trained out of a quarantine centre. So
yeah,
the accommodation set up, I'm sure, you know, it's a pretty big place there. Wherever there's some portable accommodation for the staff there, I think most of the lads over there will jump at the opportunity to be able to come down. And, you know, once they've done their 2 weeks there, well, we're the most scrutinised industry at the moment. You know, the government set strict guidelines with us, and everyone's adhering to that. And, you know, with their temperatures getting taken every day, and, you know, everyone's following the right protocols to keep racing afloat, and that's what we want, and that's what the government wants, certainly, and hopefully that can continue. So, if, you know, I think there could be ways around it if they put their heads together and they could set up some sort of accommodation down there for the boys.
Yeah, absolutely. And for that matter. The people involved in racing definitely deserve an applause because they've been so good at keeping it going this whole way through what's going on at the moment, and it's about the only thing that hasn't sort of stopped at some stage and kept some sort of normality.
Exactly. It's been great for the profile of racing, I'm sure, and there's a lot of people that, as you say, there's been no footy or cricket or whatever was on, what time of the year, but people watching tennis, or it's really gave us some good coverage time, and, you know, the Channel 7 telecast has been terrific, and bringing into people's homes, and it's hopefully that we can continue this, and it doesn't interfere with, but it shouldn't interfere with the racing going ahead. I think if everyone does the right thing, it's going to continue on and get stronger and stronger as the better races come along, for sure.
Now, last one before I let you go, Rob. We know that the Williams family were looking to sell Macedon Lodge. Any chance you put in an offer to buy the place and set up Hickmont Racing there?
Yeah, I'm just waiting for that Powerball to get up to about 80 million, so I've got a little bit more to spend on it when I do purchase it, but I'd jump at the opportunity to buy it if I had the money, but unfortunately it's just a bit out of my reach.
He couldn't do mates rates for you, look after you a bit?
Yeah, interest free would be no good for me even. I love the train out there. It's just a magnificent setup, and how it has it sold, it's beyond me. You know, it's been designed specifically around horses relaxing and with variety and all the creature comforts. I think if someone did come in there and want to turn it into a commercial property, it takes away what it was designed about. It really has to be a horse lover and someone who's prepared to spend the money or has got the money to, not to waste, but it is luxury money that the results will speak for themselves if they buy a property like that. If you've got someone running it that knows what they're doing, and the results will speak for itself and you'll be winning the major races for sure.
A Cox Plate and a Melbourne Cup win this spring, Rob, you might only have to wait for a $20 million Powerball.
Maybe 50.
Rob, thanks very much for being a part of the show, mate. I appreciate you taking the time and coming in the trainer's hut to have a chat about a couple of spring hopefuls, and wish you all the best with them going forward.
Good on you, Todd. Love to be on the show, mate.
Rob Hickmont there, joining me in the trainer's hut and discussing a couple of his Melbourne Cup hopefuls, and as we heard throughout the chat, potentially a Cox Plate for Django Freeman, but time will tell. And gee whiz, the way he talks about Chabot, that is very, very interesting to hear. And he's got a very high opinion of the horse. And we know the story that that Rob elaborated on there with Suman had a horse in his sights and he was at Caulfield looking to get a trainer involved. And he showed the video to Rob and Rob said, just do it and we'll get the rest sold. And as you heard, it didn't take long to sell him. And the owners certainly have a very, very interesting horse on their hands there. It's great to have a chat with Rob. He's, like I said off the top, he's a two-time Melbourne Cup winning trainer. And as Suman said on the show previously, he probably doesn't get the rewards that he deserves as a two-time Melbourne Cup winning trainer, obviously being involved in the Lloyd Williams operation. But it's no mean feat, and he certainly looks well-placed to add to that tally this year. And the Bart Cummings, gee whiz, I can't wait for that race. It is going to be an absolute phenomenon. We know that Chabot's heading there. We've had Tess Drennan on the show previously say that Lord Belvedere could potentially be a chance to run in the race. And I've said on this show previously that the Lavazza Long Black on Melbourne Cup Day was one of my favourite races over the 2,800 metres. Well, the Bart Cummings, I tell you, that race is fast becoming one of the best races this country has to offer outside of Group 1 company, and I dare say it'd be better than some of the Group 1 races we run, because these progressive stayers that are on the way up, and they might not be in the Melbourne Cup calculations for that year. Horses such as King of Legrands have ran in it previously, and he'll have a lot more to say in this year's Spring Carnival than he did when you ran in that a couple of years ago. So it certainly is a great initiative by the VRC, as Rob and I discussed, that it has promoted the race and really attracted a quality horse. Well, the Andrew Ramsden is heading in the exact same direction. Surprise Baby and Steel Prince the first year, and who knows how far Ocean X and King of Legrands, who come through the race as well, will go this year. So Well, that's it for episode 12 of The Trainer's Hut. Thank you for joining me. Thanks again to Rob Hickmont for being a part of the show. If you like what you're hearing and you haven't caught up with our previous episodes, jump on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe or follow and leave a review. Let us know what you think. You want to get in touch or maybe a suggestion for the show or just a bit of feedback, negative, positive or otherwise, get in touch with us on the Twitter. At Todd Blum Bloodstock is the handle on Twitter. And you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just search Sport Thought, which is the website that we bring the show to you on, sportthought.com.au. And get in touch with me and let me know what you think of the show. Appreciate you for listening. We'll see you next time in The Trainer's Hut. I'm Todd Blum. See you then.